hang on. You thought you had a bad boy persona when you were more invested in Hannah Montana than I was.
It's not unfair.
You're listening to Deeper Magic.
Hey everyone, welcome to Deeper Magic Season 3, Anna, Episode 1. My name is Peter. Say hi, Anna.
Hi, Anna.
It is good to be back doing Season 3. It's hard for me to believe that we're sitting here with Season 3. It's been kind of a mashup of 2 years of just different episodes. Part of when I looked back, I thought we sort of just vomited everything that we ever thought about, that we felt like was important for about 2 seasons. We didn't know how many episodes we would do, but it's been really fun to do 2 seasons. I'm a little amazed at the number of people that indicate to us that they've been listening. I've had seminary students queuing up episodes. I don't even know what that means for sure, but they go through the whole library of episodes and queue them up. And we really did a lot of different topics in that time. It's been really fun to do it with you as my daughter. I feel like we've gotten to know each other a lot better in this process too.
Yeah, it's been really fun. First of all, I was laughing a little bit when you were like, this is season three. And I was like, we didn't know until like 2 weeks ago that we had season one and season two. And then we were going back and we were trying to decide where season one would end and season two would start. And then we were like, do we even do that? Or do we just say like we're in season three and just go from there? And I feel like that has really kind of summed up the experience of you and me doing Deeper Magic at this point, where we've had so much fun and just been like, we're just going to talk about what we want to talk about. And we're not doing it within a specific format or a specific structure. We're just here to have these conversations and make them accessible to people. And it's been so fun. And the conversations that we have had, just you and I, and the conversations we've had with other people about topics that I wouldn't have even ever thought about otherwise, it's been a really cool journey so far.
It really is. Some of the guests that we had on were just really fun to hang with and chat about stuff, and being outside of the restrictions of an institution where we have to have some sort of targeted message and demographic analysis, we can sort of just go anywhere. And I felt like we were able to hit on a few things, including this idea of the deeper magic, which comes from Narnia. If people listening to this episode want to go back to our very first couple episodes, we spent quite a bit of time reading even from a page of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where Aslan breaks the stone table, comes back to life, and describes the deeper magic that has existed. It's really the healing magic that is in this world that we believe finds its center in Christianity. And it's maybe even a kind of a unique take, unfortunately, for so many people who think God is this big angry being in the sky and God is looking to smite us down. And thank goodness he got a pound of flesh from Jesus. And now we get to go to heaven when we die. And sort of that weird version of faith, as opposed to God being this person who really desires to see the healing of all things.
Yeah. And the like pound of flesh kind of way of thinking about Christianity is something that I feel like is actually really representative of the white witch's magic in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which is so fascinating to me, that it is the idea of like, well, you got to do the sacrifice and you got to do the thing and whatever.
Wait, are you suggesting that the theology of the church today is more reflective of the white witch than it is of Aslan? That feels like a semi-warm take, Anna.
Maybe. I might be lightly suggesting that just a little bit. But a lot of what we've talked about with the concept of the deeper magic before the dawn of time is that it is love, it is restoration, it is healing and redemption. And it's unfortunately not something that I see taught a whole lot, which is part of why we decided to start this podcast in the first place, was to have those conversations and remember like where Christianity came from and what the ideas originally were and what kind of message was actually being taught.
Yeah, and it's too far afield for this episode, but if you actually read the scripture and get past the 30 or so verses that are taught in Sunday school, scripture is just full of the message of the restorative work of God. So it's a very long conversation. I do it in classes sometimes about how we got to this version of God. Yeah. But I think the idea of so many people leaving the church and so many people with church hurt and not interested, or people that have a lot of questions in the church, this is, I think, there's been a theological error. It's hard to say that, but I think it's been really profound. And certainly as I've taught a more restorative biblical view of God in classes these last 10, 15 years, people wake up and say, wait a second, maybe I actually do want to do this Christian thing. It just doesn't sound like how I heard about it. So it's been a great 2 seasons, I guess we'll call it. And as we pivot into season 3 now, there is a big change coming to Deeper Magic. We decided to invite 2 other people into the host
role. Well, you wanted to invite somebody else in, and then I said that if you get to bring a friend, I get to bring a friend.
Wait, how that actually happened?
It kind of was. And not only that, Lily, you know, it's not your turn, because we'll introduce you in a second. But not only that, I want if we learn nothing from the first 2 seasons, Lily, it's that women cannot speak in the church. Not only that, I shouldn't say this out loud, but I think, Anna, did we ask 9 other previous guests of Deeper Magic if they wanted to host, and they all said no, and so we sort of landed on Lily. As
see, like, Lily was my top choice.
She was like deep on the bench. We had to go deep on the bench. It was not easy.
My dad said, "Who do you want on the show?" And I said, "Lily." Yeah, and then Dad said, "Can I bring Logan?" And I said, "I mean,
if it makes you feel any better, Lily, I'm still saying no. I'm here against my will."
We did kidnap Logan earlier today. Mm-hmm. That's why he's here.
We did indeed. So introduce us to Lily.
Yeah, so Lily is amazing and wonderful, and I'm so excited to have her on the podcast. We had her on in either season one or season two, depending on when you decided
the clearly delineated seasons, yes.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of people that I have in my life right now that I can have the variety of conversations that I have with Lily, where we can talk about politics, we can talk about religion, we can talk about what we're reading, we can talk about what we're watching, we can talk about relationships and life and ourselves and all of it, and we can go to those really deep places, but we have a really fun time doing it. And so as we were having conversations about who do we want to bring into this podcast, who do we think can have the caliber of conversation that we're having and really dive in on all these topics, but also bring viewpoints that neither of us would have thought of. Mm-hmm. Lily, you were the first person that jumped to my mind. So I'm really excited to have you here.
Welcome to Deeper Magic, Lily.
I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. You're their 10th choice. And when we got to you, why were you willing to say yes to this whole thing?
Well, I've been on an episode before.
You have been, yes.
And
you were their 10th choice.
Incredibly fun. And any conversation I've had with you, Peter, and you, Anna, has just been like so life-giving and exciting to me. Anna, to your point, like, there's not very many people that I know in my real life that I can have the breadth of conversations mm-hmm. with. So obviously was super excited to be invited back and, I mean, invited back at all, but also like specifically to be in a host chair. I'm just super excited to be here.
Can I just note one thing right now is that we did do a sort of a rough draft take of this episode. And did you notice that I'm only calling you host right now? Because one of the things
I'm
that
so
came out
in
that first...
I watched you, I think, a hostess.
I did. I called you a hostess in the first one. And I'm pretty sure, like, if I know for sure you haven't forgiven me about that.
No, I have.
But watching how...
I'm a little bit like Jesus.
I'm still puzzled over... So what was so scandalizing about that, Lily? And then we'll turn it over to Logan.
Because there's no reason for the term to be gendered. That is like a carryover from medieval times, in my opinion.
Well, okay, so that's fair. But you're how old?
I'm 28.
And Anna, you're how old?
23.
And so that's 50. And we've talked about this. I'm actually older than both of you combined.
Yeah.
So I grew up with stewardesses and hostesses,
that's
and it's just
horrifying.
Taking me a little while to change my linguistic choice.
I get it. We're on this journey together. We're here to support you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. In a loving and chastising way.
Well, Logan, turning over to you, and I'll introduce you more formally in just a second, but hostess, at least you and I, we really vibed on, is vibes the right term, right?
Mm-hmm, you did.
Yeah. We vibe. Why am I looking at you, Lily? We need to live stream this. So, Logan, I used the term hostess, and you immediately went where? You went to
the snack cakes.
Thank you. I couldn't, and Lily, if I remember right, had never even eaten or maybe even heard
Mm-mm.
of a ding dong.
No.
Oh, no, a ding dong.
A ding dong, yeah.
What was the other one that was mentioned?
I believe just ding dong. Hostesses are just, a ding dong is a hostess.
Yeah.
It might be me that you were planning that or pinning that on because
oh really you didn't know what a ding dong is
no
good
no.
callback Peter
yeah that's
way to go your age is showing
let's turn back to Logan Logan we did I know that you're here against your will
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
we appreciate that
still haven't agreed to it but thanks for having me
and you're how old again
I'm 28 years old
okay so if I add you and Lily up at least you exceed me by a couple of years
just a bit
at this point and you and I did the Faith Radio deal together for quite a while long mm-hmm. story short I was a morning show host how old were you when you were you like 23
oh man that would have been 2018 so
oh
I was
gosh.
Yeah I was
20, like 11.
Yeah, that's 23 is 11.
Hey.
Those are the same age.
Okay.
You can legally do all the same things at 23. You
guys.
Can.
I feel like we're forgetting that Anna is literally 23 right now.
Oh, that's actually really true.
No, imagine being on a radio show with your father. Could you even imagine?
No, not a concept of what that would be like.
Logan, that thought has never crossed my mind. Although we have learned that we might need to do some paternity testing stuff because neither you nor me can grow a beard.
That's Sorry. True.
And so if you swab your cheek,
crazy
yes.
intro.
I'm pretty sure you're not my son. I don't remember Hallie having you, but you know, I am 50. You guys will have to find your way back to the mics eventually. Eventually. So I don't remember Hallie and me having you. Mm-hmm. But granted, I'm old. Mm-hmm. And so it just feels like we have such synergy with your Greek jawline and your lack of facial hair.
I so appreciate you calling out my greatest insecurity on a podcast where no one would have known if you hadn't said anything ever to begin with. So thank you for that.
Yeah, your six-month beard was quite the sight.
I'm going to go delete everything off my Instagram right now.
We had a great time on the morning show together. And I thought it was what a morning show is supposed to be, lighthearted and fun and exactly this sort of thing. If we had ever had the beard conversation on Facebook, can you imagine?
Because
our demographic was 55-year-old female. And that's a wonderful demographic. Mm-hmm. And let's please minister to and address that demographic. Mm-hmm. But you and I were probably not best suited for that demographic morning in and morning out, but we sure had a lot of fun doing it.
Oh my goodness. It was a 10 out of 10 morning every single morning. But it was a landscape that we were a little bit limited to. There was a mold to fit and there was an audience to speak to, and that required cutting a lot of things, shaping a lot of personality statements, and it was enjoyable as it was, it just wasn't the right fit for either of us.
It really wasn't. So why did you say not yes to Deeper Magic?
Why did I say not yes to Deeper Magic?
Yes.
Because, Peter, as much as I hate to admit it, I really respect your input on the spiritual conversation of how our world and our country looks involved with Christianity and the church.
Lily, can you say that?
I respect you? I was going to say it's crazy that we got on recording that Logan respects my
dad. Seriously,
I didn't think that was
ever
going to happen. I was like, that's crazy.
The fact that my possible son said that to his dad right now is really, again, I'm going to check with Hallie and make sure we didn't have six kids and I just missed it.
I don't know if I'm ever in my life going to get over the transition from you talking about me, your actual child, your 23-year-old daughter, that we started in that conversation and with no segue.
None.
You went, we're going to need to do some paternity testing. And then you weren't even talking about me. You were talking about Logan. Well, I just was like,
I don't think
that's
you understand.
That's going to stay in my brain forever.
The bonding moment that we had over dinner tonight when we realized that neither one of us, that something about puberty got short-circuited for each of us was really, it was a thing. And I finally, your greatest insecurity, Logan, has been my greatest insecurity.
Oh. Well, look at that.
So, I watch all my friends grow these big scruffy beards and you know, right around the jawline and the chin and underneath the nose and like that whole thing. I just can never do that.
Why does it feel like this is turning into Theo Vaughn's podcast?
Well, because I'm sitting here asking the question of, is this how guys bond? Because when I run into another woman in the wilderness, I'm like, oh my God, you're so pretty. And then we're best friends forever and ever.
Obviously.
And that's it. And I'm never going to see her again for as long as I live.
But
we are best friends. Mm. And the amount of girls that I have become best friends with in like a bar bathroom or something is insane. But I'm like, is this what it takes for guys to bond?
Usually it takes alcohol.
That's
probably part of it.
That's a big part of it. Sports or alcohol, one of the two.
Okay.
Yeah, and the combination
of the two. Or
your
greatest insecurities.
That comes after the alcohol.
It does.
Cool.
It does.
Much.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
The reason I decided to be here against my will today is because I had so much fun talking with you, Peter, throughout the show, throughout
That's
the
great.
Years. Not just in the fun of the conversations, but in the depth of the conversations. I was not loving my spiritual journey at the moment. And your insights on how you could approach faith really changed a lot of things for me and versus how I'd experienced them in the past. So when we were sitting here having conversations about possibly being a part of this, one of the things that we had talked about was who this would be for, who this podcast was meant to be listened to by and who it was meant to impact. And what I really wanted to be a part of was something that impacted more than a stereotype that you'd have in your mind for who goes to church or who doesn't, because there is so much width and so much breadth to the kind of people who engage with what faith is. It's everyone. How it looks for you is different. But I think what really stuck for me as something that was valuable for this was looking at a spectrum of individuals and realizing that we want to reach people who are in the church but skeptical of a number of parts about it, or people who are out of the church but curious about spirituality and faith, and everyone in between. There is very few people in my life that I recognize as fully into a church community and happy with how everything is, how everything works, and how that experience goes for them every week. there's a lot of questions, and sometimes you can't ask those questions in that community. Or people who were pushed out of a church and don't want to go back anytime soon. But you know what? The concept of God, the concept of faith means something, maybe not the way that they were raised with, but still somewhere they want to explore. I think those two bookends of people, most of us are somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. When you said that, we were all meeting at Lily's house one night, just sort of brainstorming about what we wanted this podcast to be. And you laid out those bookends, I think, so helpful. It probably is not a podcast for just the hardened atheist. And I have hardened atheists that I know and enjoy, and I love the conversation, probably, though they would not want to listen to this. And it's probably on the other side of it, not a podcast for the really sort of entrenched conservative Christian who has their 10 creedal statements and everything is all sort of sorted out. It's for this wide group in between that maybe has experienced some church hurt along the way, or maybe has experienced some skepticism along the way, or just has questions that just don't get addressed. And they don't have to be people who hate or love the institutional church. It's just, I think, a wide swath of people that really would like, and this was my little blurb that I wrote to you when, because Logan, you, when we were doing the radio show, that was my first ever time I'd ever been on media. So you always...
It showed.
Yeah, totally. Did. And so you always kept me to task and on point and on focus. And you have always asked us, the group of the four of us, what are these conversations going to be like? And so I tried to jot this down, mm-hmm. and you hearted my text. Is that what you did?
I did. I put a heart on it. Yeah. That means I like it.
Okay.
A lot.
That's what that means. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. So I just said meaningful, fun, genuine, and reliable conversations about the spiritual landscape today. Mm-hmm. And I think I can add to that by just saying it'll be underpinned by sort of that healing, hopeful, restorative energy, because I do think a lot of people are just hurting for so many different reasons. I mean, we could just tick that all off the list, whether it's coming from broken families or people entrenched in anxiety and depression and fear, or have been hurt or even abused. And I mean, tick it off. We could do 100 different lists. So is there a way to have meaningful, genuine, fun spiritual conversations that have a bit of hopefulness in them, and not pandering hopefulness, but actually have some reliable hopefulness in the midst of them? So I don't know if we can all pull it off, the four of us, but I know that that's certainly the goal for all of this. So Anna, anything else before we jump in? Because the point of this podcast is for us to just say a little bit more about our background, because it's pretty mm-hmm. varied, and we're in very different spots on the spiritual journey. And
totally.
And when I say that, I'm not talking about one spot is more advanced than another spot. We're just in different spots on the mm-hmm. spiritual journey. And so the purpose of this episode is what?
I mean, mostly just for all of us to get to know each other and share our backgrounds and talk about why we're here and why this is important to all of us. I'm good to kind of dive right in. There's so much fear in my heart, because immediately before we started recording, Logan was like, I have an idea for how we're going to decide
who goes first.
Who goes first?
Peter said we should decide what order everyone shares their backstory in. And I thought, I'll just write on a piece of paper, 1, 2, 3, 4, everyone will draw straws and we'll see how that lands. I don't have a pen.
And then you started shredding papers, and then you started cackling.
You did.
And then you said, I'm going to share this with you guys live.
Because it's the stupidest idea I've ever had.
And I said, I don't know that I want to do this show anymore.
Listen, in order to make it fair, I thought I will write on a paper and do 1 through 4. I don't mm-hmm. have anything to write with, so I started ripping up the receipt I found in my pocket. And like drawing straws, they're all different widths. And whoever gets the thinnest and skinniest crumpled piece
this is
of paper
not real.
Will be the first to go. So I have 4 wadded up pieces of paper in my hand. Hey, go for it, guys.
What?
Listen, creativity is not always cute.
How are we gauging width and height?
You unwrap the piece of paper.
I thought you meant of the crumpled up ball.
That's what I thought, too. And also, I do have a joke about, like, pretty privilege, like, locked away in my brain somewhere. Yeah. When you were, like, the skinniest one
and
goes
now,
and I was like, wow.
No.
This is what I have.
And now, what was a crumpled piece of gum looking like somebody had been chewed
you
on
go first.
Is now, yes, it looks like I have the
Am
smallest piece of paper.
I'm
then
last.
Lily has the second.
I'm third.
Peter is third. And look
I'm
at
last.
That. Anna's last.
And the ground rules are probably about 6 to 7 minutes per person.
Easy.
Anybody can ask any question
about
any
story.
Background.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
We hope
that listeners can kind of at least find their story and some of the stories here, because it is a fairly diverse story that mm-hmm. we're around mm-hmm. the table with.
Yeah.
But anybody can ask any question, right? That's the rule. And then I will be
Do
the
you
one
have
who...
like a guiding question that we all start with, Peter? How is this?
I don't have a guiding
come on,
question. You would think that I should right now, and that I would have prepared.
Okay,
I deeply have. Okay,
Anna,
I know.
Yeah, good. Anna has it.
Good.
But first, you have to apologize for saying that I was 11 years old.
Anna. Mm-hmm. I'm really sorry that I thought you were 11. You're way more mature than that.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah. It would have been better if you weren't laughing when you said but I do appreciate it.
You have wisdom beyond your years. Their years, mm-hmm. for sure.
And your years, because I'm the one who came up with the intro question.
That's actually super fair. Okay, you have the intro question. I will have on my iPhone over here a little timer. Mm. So I'm going to play the Logan role that when you get this down to like 1 minute left.
Oh, wow.
We're getting signaled.
Yeah,
and how long? Bat signal goes up.
And you're first, Logan?
I guess I'm first.
And we're gonna give you 7 minutes, but Anna has the opening question for you.
Go for it, Anna.
So this is maybe less directional than you would hope it would be. Mm-hmm. But I had a professor who the first week of every class that he ever taught, the question was always, in 2 minutes or less, how did you get from your birth to where you are? Like, what were the guiding events along the way?
Oh, my gosh.
Because the whole idea of that professor's question was because it was, like, specific writing classes.
Yeah.
And so the idea was to have a sense of what communities have shaped you, what life events have shaped you, and mm-hmm. how do they impact the stories that you can tell.
I think I can try to tackle that 2 minutes or less.
Okay,
easy.
Here we go.
All right.
7 minutes, though.
You have seven, well, and I just started. I didn't even count.
But that's for questions. Yeah. Oh, so true. You get a two-minute monologue, and mm-hmm. then we have 5 minutes of questions.
All right. So I was raised in small-town Wisconsin, just in western Wisconsin, barely really crossing the border with Minnesota. So I call myself a Minnesconsinite. Mm. I was early involved in the arts, in singing, in music, choir. That's where I found my love and my passions. Was in a lot of drama club, was choir president. Ended up going to a small Lutheran church where I was growing up. Got through confirmation and all that jazz. Ended up becoming a camp counselor at a summer Bible camp, which was where I really started getting engaged with the church. That was where I found my calling. Being camp counselor was the best job I've ever had. Singing songs, dunking on campers in capture the flag games, 10 out of 10 experience of my life. After that, I went to college at the University of Northwestern, which is a religious college here in the Twin Cities. It spent 4 years there studying broadcasting and radio. At my final year there is when I joined the show with Peter and became his producer. Graduating college, I accepted a job with the network down in Waterloo, Iowa, where I was a radio DJ for a number of years.
Your star was on the rise. Everybody in the Faith Radio Network was like, Logan Roush's star is on the rise. Like, he was going to take over the whole thing and be the voice of Faith Radio.
So wasn't it spectacular when I fell to earth like crazy?
He totally did.
No, I spent a couple years down in Iowa. And I ended up leaving the radio station. It was not the place for me. And I spent the last couple years doing bartending, something I've always done throughout different parts of my life. Growing up in Wisconsin, everyone's naturally just given a bartending license at the age of five. Mm-hmm. And then I've spent my free time being doing voiceover work, voice acting, commercials, audiobooks, video games. And so always done creative work, love video games as much as I love football, and I don't know how to reconcile those two things. I'm in very strange circles. I have friend groups that do not interact, and that's the 2 minutes. I feel like that runs pretty quick.
That does run pretty quick. Yeah. You were actually like spot on in your little mental timer. Nice. That was 2 minutes and 14 seconds.
Thank you. I was a radio professional.
That was very much a radio professional. Years of being a mm-hmm. media professional.
Mm-hmm. Lily, do you have a question for Logan?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I have so many questions.
All right.
But
he's still trying to recover from the vegetable
mostly
question.
I'm curious your interest and passion growing up in the arts and also sports. Mm-hmm. You're an athlete.
Yes.
How did that lead you to deciding to pursue broadcast media in the first place?
Oh yeah. Honestly, I really enjoyed theater and I really just enjoyed public speaking. Anytime there was an opportunity for
things
a microphone.
No one has ever said.
I was going to say.
That's really true. Diva Boy came out really early in this whole thing.
You know, it kind of went that way. It helps going to a small Wisconsin school with not a lot of men involved in the arts. It really just kind of turned into they need a host for the talent show. They need a commentator for the student teacher basketball game. The local radio station needs a color commentator for the Friday night game that's going to go on. Anytime there was a microphone around and a faculty member had to get a student involved, they kind of just came to me. So I was able to get exposed to a lot of public broadcast work early on, and I really kind of found an enjoyment for it. I listened to a lot of radio growing up. Just morning variety shows was something that was really interesting to me. So found it as a way to sort of gauge this creative side of myself that I really, really love to express. And the, you know, left brain side of analytically working on planning, hitting marks, benchmarks, timing, topics, kind of married the two for me. So got involved with it in school and really liked it.
So if we let you go overtime, mm-hmm. by me, we got about a minute left here.
Sure.
So my question relates to your time in Iowa, mm-hmm. where your star was on the rise.
Sure.
And I know we got together in the middle of that. I think you were back in the Minneapolis area, and we chatted for a little bit. And you fell like a hot comet to Earth. You burned.
Wow.
I mean, you just burned in. I mean, creating
sure.
a crater.
Yeah.
At the end of it, but I remember one of the things that was so intriguing to me because I don't think your experience in this was alone at all. In fact, I think many, if not most, people that are trying to sort out the faith journey within Christianity had the experience you were describing. Yours was a real stark one because you had to be the public voice mm-hmm. of a Christian organization day in and day out mm-hmm. on drive time, which meant that you were shepherding people, you were telling stories, I'm sure bringing scripture verses in, vetting Christian music, all of that. And behind the scenes, you're thinking, I kind of think most of this stuff is baloney. So I just remember the idea that you felt like you were a fraud and mm-hmm. you just couldn't stay in that space any longer, as gifted as you were with it.
Yeah. That's
There's no question there. I'd just love for you to comment on that.
Yeah, it really, that's kind of what it came down to. I was really happy with the job that I had and the people that I was around. But at the end of the day, the aspect of it that required me to be a smiling face for women ages 55 to 60, divorced with two children, that was the demographic. Her name was Jennifer.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yes, for sure. Because we had to name the person that was the demo.
Yes.
Because then you could speak to that person figuratively in your mind.
Mm-hmm. It was a ton of fun to a degree. Eventually, the wick burnt out. Mm-hmm. It was harder and harder to come into this place of being a happy, peppy, spiritual uplifter for people when I did not feel positive about my faith at all. And at a certain point, I had none. I currently do not attend church. I have not attended church in many, many years. And at the moment, I have no plans to go back.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something I'm totally closed off to, but it came down to the point of the teachings that I had received in the church and through my biblical studies degree that I was mandated to major in by my university. It was not a choice. I've double major, mm-hmm. not by choice.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot about how Christ looked, how the church looked, and how we were meant to act. And more, I started to see less of that in the world. And it became a lot harder for me to stand up on this pedestal. And for instance, I tell the story often of going to an event and having people come out at the concert and saying, "We love your work. We're so inspired by you and uplifted." And then I thank them and they drive away with some of the most hateful bumper stickers I've ever seen. And some of this stuff that makes me say, it does not make me proud to be a Christian. I'm ashamed of it. And I don't really want to be a part of this anymore because it's turned into something that I'm not proud to be a part of. And I don't feel anything in myself that makes me want to stay here.
Yeah.
And so to be on the air and be that uplifting person, I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, thanks for your vulnerability with that. But I have a suspicion that there's far more people in that similar kind of camp than you're, and they almost want something to be true, but they can't find the truth in it. And so I have always experienced you as somebody who's still searching and seeking and wondering, and is there something of substance on which we can hold our or hang our hat, as it were? But you couldn't find it within that version of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Okay, thanks, Logan. Anna, do you want to? I think are you next?
I think I'm next.
I don't know how to interpret these pieces of paper.
Do you have eyes?
One is bigger than another one.
Lily, you have no idea how so spot on that is because my mom and I have been trying to get my dad to get prescription glasses for years now.
It is
oh,
bad.
You actually don't have eyes.
No, he doesn't.
No, I don't.
You're right.
Don't.
These are three sizes of paper here, Peter.
They're all different.
Lily, you need to get a picture of that for our social account.
I really do.
Sure. Uh-huh. Yep. Okay. So are you going to introduce? You're going to.
Can you give me the question again?
Yes.
Absolutely. It was 2 minutes or less of basically everything significant in your life from your birth to when you are now. What are the things that shaped you? What are the things that impacted your life and how you see the world? What are the things that impacted the stories that you can tell?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
okay, I'm
going
to go at this a very weird way, but
go
I'm going to start by saying that I am a Chicago Bears fan.
That's just unreal.
Strong start.
When people ask
me, I'm tuning out actually from here.
When people ask me why I'm a Chicago Bears fan, they ask me, "Well, did you grow up in Chicago?" And I say, "No." Well, technically, I was born in Illinois, not Chicago. Freeport, go Pretzels. Outside of Rockford.
Did you just cheer a
go
snack?
Pretzels. I have that is the mascot for the high school in Freeport,
okay,
Illinois.
Okay.
It's a pretzel?
It's like pretzels. Straight up a pretzel.
So you guys just get folded every football game?
I mean, I only lived there till I was two, so I actually don't know.
Go Pretzels.
Go Pretzels.
Is maybe
I just felt like
Freeport
fear.
Started saying that.
Yeah. Oh.
No, I'm gonna start saying it, but with no other context.
No context.
Yeah.
For sure use a school voucher and just get out of Dodge.
So I was born in Illinois. But I'm a Chicago Bears fan because my parents are from Iowa, Cedar Rapids. I don't know the high school mascot there, so I can't give them a shout out. But that's like the Chicago side of Iowa. So they're like Bears fans. Okay. So, Bears fan. So I lived in Illinois until I was two. Then I moved to Western Michigan, lived there until I was eight. Then I moved to North Carolina, lived there for about 18 months. Then moved to Minnesota, lived in Minnesota until I graduated high school. Went to college outside Chicago, back to Minneapolis.
Where did you go to college? You know you want to say it.
I don't want to say it.
Because every time you say it,
I have
you
a whole side
so carefully.
Episode that I could go on right
all
now.
All right, so we're just going to leave the mystery. We're going to leave the mystery of where you went to school then.
Yes.
Okay.
If you look me up on LinkedIn, you will find it very quickly.
Wow, nice plug.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
yes. So anyway, moved around a lot growing up. And some of that was just like, parents' jobs. We're moving around. My parents got divorced when I was eight. That was when we moved to Minnesota, lived with my grandparents for a while. Then when I was in high school, my dad passed away. I'm talking about this in this like very quick hit.
Yeah.
So it's a 2-minute, mm-hmm. you know, feel like I'm back on a mission trip in high school giving my testimony. But
I'm so sorry to have done this to you.
it's good. This is like good mm-hmm. content. But yeah, so I think like obviously a lot of very formational experiences, especially like early in life and in that like 8-year span in particular. I think a lot of, I mean, our generation, maybe specifically like Logan, we're the same age, but Anna too, I know it like trickles down, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of kids, your parents divorced mm-hmm. as well. Like that's very common mm-hmm. in, you know, our generation. And I think something for a lot of people our age that has been a contributor to like not being part of the church anymore in Christian circles. But especially like when we were living in Minnesota, after my parents got divorced and then especially after my dad died, church was like, that was safe for me.
Yeah.
That was a place that I could go with people, and I look back and I know so many people don't have this experience in their local church communities, but I'm really grateful that I did. I had, you know, a youth pastor and a lot of pastors and leaders, and other people, a lot of friends, like people that just like really cared and poured into me, that I felt like not being part of the church was never really an option, not in like a weird obligation forceful way, but just purely because it felt so real and connected to my real life. And when I needed, you know, when I was having a bad day or like struggling with depression after my dad died, my small group leader, whose father had passed away when she was in college, like she reached out to me and she took half a day off work and just like got coffee with me. And we went and walked around a park. And like it was this like very faith was this very real thing that caused people to act differently and to, you know, care for you in like really particular ways. Mm. And so even though now in adulthood, like I've certainly gone through my own kind of seasons of, you know, questioning different things about the institutional church in America and the Western world more generally. But I think I've always been able to look and see like because of my own personal experiences too, I can see like the roots are good. And I can see that there's something there worth being part of, especially in seasons of hardship and trial, because that's when the church has been more real to me than anything else.
Follow-up question. I mean, if I can ask Lily, I mean, this is on the more serious side of it related to losing your dad. How does that mark you over the next 10, 12? You were 15, if I remember right?
16.
And so you're 28, you said. Mm-hmm. So over 12 years, how does the cycle of grief go with something like that? And how does that shape sort of your view of the world?
Yeah. Something I've been reflecting on a lot, especially very recently. You know, I'm 6-ish years removed from like graduating college, which like I feel so ancient.
Super old.
Yeah, you almost have no lifetime ahead of you.
Basically done with your life already.
Yep. End of the road. Yeah.
Have you picked out your grave plot yet? I'm going next
week.
We're
working on it. Yeah. So graduated, you know, 6 years ago from college. So I think now like hitting this point where, you know, a lot of people I went to school with and friends from college, a lot of people are like, okay, yeah, they're like set and they've, you know, hit these benchmarks and they're in this career that's really meaningful and like all these things. And I think in some ways it probably seems like I have all of that going for me externally. But at, like hitting certain, you know, milestones that you kind of expect people to hit when they're in their 20s, married, own a home, like, you know, have a like full-time salaried career. But I think I feel this sense of, I look back on my college years and I'm like, oh man, I started college 2 years after my dad died.
Yeah.
And I had been going to therapy and like doing all this mental health work, but so at the time I was just like, oh, I'm in this new place. I'm having so much fun, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I look back now and I'm like, oh, I don't feel like I was myself.
Hmm.
And at the time I would have told you that like, oh, I was just figuring out who I was. But now that I'm so many years removed from that season, I look back on it and I'm like, oh, I don't really actually feel like that's who I am. And I feel like there were things that I kind of discarded during that season as far as, you know, my interests and what I was passionate about and even the career that I started to pursue and then have kind of shifted in the last couple of years. That I think now what I'm doing is a lot more in line with like who I was prior to losing my dad and the interests and things that I had prior to leaving for college. So I think in a lot of ways it would be easy for me to feel guilty about that and feel like, oh, I like wasted college. Like what was I doing? And then I'm like, oh, I was like grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've learned to have a lot of compassion like for my younger self. But then I think there's just also things that, you know, getting married, buying a house, like even this last weekend, Corey's dad came up for the weekend to help him install a new water heater. Mm. And I was like, so glad that they got to like have all this time together. And I went out for coffee with a friend in the afternoon and I was like, I was driving home and I parked in the garage and I was like, man, like my husband just got to spend 48 hours with his dad. And like, I never get to do that again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it just hits you in like these different ways where like, I think I'm at a stage now where I, you know, I'm not bargaining anymore. I'm not like still getting confused, like, oh, I'm going to see it. But like, there are still moments where it like feels very fresh and real again that like, oh, this side of eternity, I'm never going to have an encounter with him again. Mm-hmm. My husband's never going to get to meet him, you know? Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. That's real.
Yeah. One of the questions that I had for you kind of about all of that is you talked about the church being a really safe place for you in the middle of all of that. And I can talk a little bit about this when it's my turn. But a part of why I left the church is that it wasn't a safe place for me when I was going through some mental health stuff in high school. And so I was just really curious what a different experience of that would look like, because my experience of the church talking about mental health was, oh, you're like not praying hard enough, or it's because you're sinning, or spiritual warfare, or things like that, and not like this is a real actual issue that we can talk about and deal with as a community, and not something that is secretly your fault.
Yeah. I mean, God knows what everyone in the church was thinking about, you know, me having to see a therapist every week. I think, you know, that even just like the generational gap between you and me, I think shows like when I was in high school, people weren't talking about mental health the way that they are now. You know, like that was the very beginning of it was like on Tumblr, it was cool if you were on Xanax or whatever. But like that was like nobody knew what that was. Mm-hmm. Now that's, you know, common language. So I don't know if it was ever really like super public knowledge that I was going to therapy and that I'd been diagnosed with depression and anxiety, or that I was like struggling with, you know, disordered eating or anything like that. Like there were so many things going on that it wasn't necessarily public, but I think what was public was like Lily just went through this really difficult thing. And so people were just like so willing to, like, I remember my senior year of high school, I would just like leave school and I would just like go to church and I would just like do my homework in the lobby and like whatever pastors or leaders were still there would like say hi to me. And it was just like it was a space that I could go when I needed to not be at home or like sitting in my bedroom all night, like being, you know, sad. And so, yeah, I think like sometimes it was really just like the physical space was like a sanctuary and a retreat for me. But also, yeah, it was just like people were willing to accept where I was at and weren't trying to like solve my my problem. Air quotes. Mm-hmm. I forgot that we're on podcast vibes right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, it was never like this, Lily is depressed and needs extra support right now. It it was a different kind of era of mental health, but
yeah,
people were aware that things were wrong and compassionate and empathetic and just open to like, I feel like there were so many people that were just surprised to see that I was at church at all. Like that, I think to me was the most interesting part was I remember the amount of people who were like, oh, wow, like you're back. Like the week after my dad's funeral, I was at youth group.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, we weren't expecting you to be here. And I was kind of like, yeah, I just don't. Where else would I be?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so far we're 0-2 and having just like perfect cleaned up people that are part of this. You know?
So true.
Yeah, exactly. So. And we've blown out the 7 minutes, but that was really worth it. Thank you for, being willing to go there with that story.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. That was not a 7 minute story. It wasn't even a 15 minute story. So thanks for, that's a 15 hour story.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll mind that out a bit in the season ahead. Does it mean it's my turn?
Do I,
I'll go quick on mine. On that, are you setting me up, Logan? I see you going towards the mic.
I mean, I just feel like I could ask you all kinds of embarrassing questions if
you're
I
really
wanted
good.
To.
You're
so
really good.
But in the my producer role is coming out, and I do know we have a time limit, so I won't hit you too hard.
All right.
I know you need more like 240 minutes to cover the expanse of your long, long old life. But if you want to hit 2 minutes as fast as you can,
I can totally do that.
Go for it.
I can probably do it in less than that. I think the thing that stands out to me after hearing your stories is. I know my faith journey growing up was one in which I hadn't really done anything majorly wrong over the course of my upbringing. I know it might be hard to believe, but I was sort of the good kid that didn't do really anything out of line. And
nothing has ever been easier for me. I was going to say, really? I'm so shocked.
Oh, that's so interesting. I thought I had this, well, I guess I never really thought I had a bad boy.
You
I'd have to grow
you had
a beard.
A bad boy persona.
No, I'd have to be able to grow a beard to have a bad boy persona.
I was also really good in school, so this is tracking.
Hang on. You thought you had a bad boy persona when you were more invested in Hannah Montana than I was.
It's not unfair. I have no defense.
That's
and
cold,
that was a really
Anna. That's so cool.
It was a really good show. It was a really,
it was a good
really
show.
Good show.
But the way that you would come in the room and sit on your laptop and pretend that you were doing work.
Yeah.
And then she would be like, I'm Hannah Montana. And every single time you would go, and I was like,
hey. You can be a bro and a Hannah Montana.
Thank you.
Fan.
You can
get
the
best of both worlds.
Let's go.
Thank you for seeing where that was going, Lily. I appreciate you.
Anyways, continue.
That's fine. I'm comfortable in my beardless masculinity, so it's no problem. I think what I found by the time I got to college, having not done a lot wrong, I mean, I had partied a little bit here and there, and I went and played baseball at Mankato State University, but I came back from that experience. And I was hurting for a lot of different reasons relationally and came back to Bethel University. But also my faith was in pieces because even though I had not done really anything egregiously wrong, Man, it was so empty. I didn't have anything. I had no substance. I had nothing there. I was a hollowed out shell of a fake person just trying to do a quiet time in the morning to, I guess, prove something to God. I don't really know. But but I think what was so puzzling in that time is there was also somebody else that I knew that had made a complete mess of a situation. And I met a few other people that had made some complete messes of their life at about the same season. And what really puzzled me, we went to a church called Church of the Open Door when I was about 19 or 20. And these people were finding hope and joy and like a sense of faith having completely messed up because they had, I guess, experienced the forgiveness and the grace of God in ways that I never had because I didn't think I needed to because I hadn't really ever screwed up. And I look back in that time and I remember I had to do some work with God to reveal just sort of my own narcissism and self-centeredness and some of the stuff that's not so obvious in terms of messing up in this world, but still can really bring a lot of pain into the world around you. And I had to actually get in touch with that really sinister side of myself that wasn't obviously public before I actually started having a vibrant faith. And the reason why I say that is there's this passage in scripture where the prostitute breaks the alabaster vial at Jesus's feet, and she's in the room of the Pharisees. The Pharisees haven't done anything wrong, at least so they think. She's completely messed up her whole life. And Jesus looks at her and says to the Pharisees, "He who has been forgiven little loves little, and he who has been forgiven much loves much," basically saying that the prostitute really understands life in the kingdom. If you want to experience love, you're going to have to be forgiven. And I just didn't ever really know any of that stuff. So long story short, that really animated my last 30 years is there's a message that was preached at that time that was basically the Great Commission. Go share the good news of Jesus, but go first to the lost sheep in the house of Israel. It's a Matthew 10 passage, basically meaning go into the church. Don't go out into the world, but go remind the church that there really is good news. And I, for whatever reason, that has animated my last 30 years. I have spent most of my life in various versions of Christendom, seeing the same kinds of hollowed out faith that I had, and also seeing people that you would never guess have a really vibrant faith, have the faith that they do. And the whole thing has always just felt terribly upside down to me. So I guess that's longer than 2 minutes, but that's been my last 30 years for sure.
My first question, what position did you play in baseball?
Center field, baby.
Okay. Yep. All right. He was a real athlete. Guys,
I was.
Don't knock him for the beard. He was a real athlete.
So, and at the risk of 2025, where you shouldn't say stuff like this, but it was 1987, I think, and my baseball coach said that I was the fastest white person he had ever seen.
You can say that. Listen, Cooper DeGene is making a lot of strides right now in the NFL for reasons you wouldn't expect. So.
Yeah, so that was my jam. I was back there at speed in center field and made my way to college playing baseball.
All right, they thought that was Sports Talk on the Deeper Magic with Peter
indeed.
And Logan.
It was indeed.
Thanks for bearing with us on that, guys.
Well, you have been on Faith Radio and spoken in churches and helped run a church briefly for a little while, and you teach in Christian universities, and I'm sure that you've always felt incredibly rock solid about everything that you believe and haven't had questions about anything at any point along the way.
Yeah, so my theology prof was so helpful with this when we had to use a book that he was forced to use. It was a required textbook called Systematic Theology by somebody named Millard Erickson, who I'm sure is a lovely person. But Bethel Seminary is where I went to seminary.
Weirdly, I think I also had
that
textbook
for
a theology
and
course.
And so the way that it was being positioned is that you had to teach the theology in the book. And my theology prof said, "We're going to read this book, and then we're going to explore other theological ideas as a counterpoint to the book." And then he would say things like, "You know what? It's okay to actually change your mind about theological ideas." And he would say, "My theology is written in pencil." And that has just shaped my journey so much. And I think where it took me is that my faith became durable, not because I could say everything that was true about God's kingdom, but because I believed I was in relationship with the one who was true. And I know that sounds trite, but my anxiety about my faith has never been relieved by my understanding of the faith. And I love to pursue every corner, every darkened corner that doesn't get explored in our faith. I love going every possible direction with it. But I'm not looking for certainty in my faith by finally solving the riddle of the faith. I just say, you know what? I'm getting up again and pursuing a God that I don't fully understand, but I've experienced his restorative energy in my life, and I can't doubt that. And so I'm going to keep saying yes to that.
We just watched the movie Conclave. Have any of you seen
it? That was the one with the Pope, right?
Oh my gosh. So good. Highly recommend. Watch it on a good TV because it is very dark. And if you watch it on a TV like ours, you will not be able to see anything. But like there's this moment where they're, you know, gathering the council. I don't know how all this works. I'm not Catholic. Gathering the council of all of the people that need to vote on who the new Pope is going to be. And the main character like gets up and he just says, you know, like the whole point of faith is that like your certainty is animating your so-called faith.
Yeah.
But if you don't have any doubt, then there's no reason to have faith at all. Like just as this, like, yeah, we shouldn't know everything or think that we know everything. The whole reason that we have faith in anything is that we don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of my favorite passages of scripture. Jesus appears on the hillside as the resurrected Lord, and it says everybody on the hillside worshiped him and some doubted. It's like, what? You're just seeing like the risen Lord, and there's somehow doubt in the midst of all of that. And that's just been really compelling to me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not scared of doubt because, I can, given better evidence, I will change what I think about the kingdom. I just care about what's true and try my best to say what those things are. And then when my head hits the pillow at night, well, so that was the other thing my theology prof said. He said, theology is supposed to be an act of worship. And so you just get up and you pursue again, but you're not trying to create 10 statements that decides who's in and who's out. And I mean, of course there's right and wrong in the world, right? I mean, I'm not some relativist that just says, oh, you do you. And you know, if you want to eat somebody's cat, that's fine. You know, something like that.
Sorry, for those who don't have the context for that, that's like my dad's classic example in his sexuality class of deciding like moral relativism.
Yeah.
Is what if you decide that you wanted to eat other people's pets? According to relativism, maybe that's okay.
Like if you doing you means that you're just going to be the neighborhood pet eater.
What if you wanted to eat somebody's pet? I've heard that speech minimum 20 times in my life.
Well, it's my best example for there might be moral principles in the world because I don't see any scenario where you could have a neighborhood pet eater who also is creating shalom in the neighborhood.
I mean, you're making great points.
No, it makes a good point. Yeah. No, it was just a crazy thing to reference without the context of hearing it 20 times.
Mm. All right. So we have to pivot over to you now. That's a little bit of my journey with that. All wrapped up in a bow, I suppose. Lily, I think you should ask Anna the question.
Okay. Anna, you know the question better than any of us. 2 minutes.
I'm sure you've answered a lot in your life.
Yeah, I actually have.
From the moment of your birth to
here,
this chair.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was born. And then
huzzah!
Woo! And then we lived in Minnesota, and then we lived in Scotland, and then we lived in Minnesota, and then we lived in Scotland, and then we lived in Minnesota again.
Did you go back to Scotland?
We'll get there.
Okay.
we moved back to Minnesota. Basically, we lived in Scotland from when I was 2 until I was about 5, and there was some moving back and forth in that period of time. We moved there originally because my dad was getting his PhD in the University of Edinburgh. And I did some education in Scotland as a wee lass. And then we moved back and I did about 6 months of education here in the U.S. And my mom said, that's enough of that, and decided to homeschool us and gave us opportunities throughout our elementary, middle, and high school education to decide if we wanted to go to public school or not. I said, you let me pursue what I'm interested in. And also, at this point, because I really like history, I'm taking college-level history classes by the time I'm 15 because I can go at my own pace instead of the pace of everybody else around me. But also, if I decide I don't want to do math for the rest of my life, I get to do the bare minimum and no more than that. And it was really lovely and it worked really well. And so I was homeschooled all throughout elementary, middle, and high school. And high school, did some online courses, some co-op. So I was like relatively socialized, sort of. And then things got a little bit weird because when I was 16, I had left the church. At that point, I was still going to youth group on a weekly basis, but I hadn't attended Sunday morning church in a while. I was only going to youth group because my friends were there. And then as you do in high school, I started hitting a point where I was like, I don't know who I am. So I guess I'm just going to adopt the personality of everybody around me. And a lot of those personalities.
Chameleon stage, right?
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Stage?
And a lot of those personalities.
Life.
Were in some really, really rough mental places that then I started getting sucked into, even though it wasn't actually my authentic personal experience. It started becoming my authentic personal experience. Mm-hmm. And that was maybe the only time in my life that my parents have sat me down and been like, we are making a unilateral decision here and you do not have any say. And we are pulling you out of theater. We're pulling you out of youth group. You are still going to the co-op, but like this is very minimal interaction at this point. And I was so furious about it for about 3 weeks.
Oh, man.
And
then I was such like, I felt like such a dad in that moment. I was just like bringing down the hammer, baby.
Yeah. And I was so angry about it for 3 weeks. And then I was like, yeah, that was probably a really good idea. And so spent the next couple of years kind of trying to rediscover who I was. But one of the things that got pulled off the table at that point was youth group and church, because it was actually making it worse instead of better. Mm-hmm. And the messages that were being given to me in those moments were really hard messages to be hearing that were definitely more damaging than good.
And that was such an awkward time because I was preaching in that very same church at the same time. So it was a really,
it was really weird.
Carry on.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then when I was 18, I had applied to go actually to the University of Northwestern with one of my best friends from high school. We had like decided we were going to room together. I knew what my major was going to be. Everything was amazing. And I had this weird growing dread of I'm not actually going to Northwestern and I don't understand why. And I got to a point with it where I didn't have anywhere else to go but to God. And that was something that had never, ever happened to me in my life before. And so I sat down and really actually prayed for probably the first time in my life, and really strongly heard that I was not going to Northwestern. And I didn't have an explanation for why or what I was supposed to be doing instead. I just knew that I wasn't supposed to go. And so 2 weeks before I was supposed to move on campus, I withdrew. I lost my best friend because of it. And ended up then doing a year of online school at Bethel, which was so bizarre. Transferred to the University of Edinburgh, so I did go back to Scotland for a year. Yeah. And so I ended up living in Scotland for a year and then really strongly heard that I was supposed to move back. And so I moved back, finished out my college education at Bethel, graduated last May. And then again, in the very weird string of decisions made where I'm like, I really don't know, but God told me to, so I guess that's what I'm doing, even though it doesn't make sense. I had been preparing to take a missionary job in Scotland since halfway through my junior year of college, and genuinely had been in contact and like preparing. And then this whole past summer and fall was filling out the application process and everything, attended the training, and kind of came down to it, and I was like, okay, am I going or am I not going? And I ended up not going. And so I'm kind of here for the foreseeable future. We're going to just see what happens. But it was, again, one of those decisions where I had a weird amount of certainty about it that I wouldn't have had if I didn't think that that was coming from God and from a place of faith. Which is so strange to me to be saying out loud, because again, I haven't attended church since early high school and I have no plans to go back anytime soon. But also a large part of the reason why I am currently here and why I wanted to stay in Minnesota is I've been leading rabbinical Hebrew studies on the Old Testament, and I started doing that in January, and have studied under a rabbi for 12 years, and now I'm in the process of studying and teaching. And that is something that has been like the most fulfilling thing that I've probably ever done. So it's a very weird kind of dichotomy of not wanting anything to do with the church in general, but also really strongly leaning into my faith and into faith community.
I think my favorite part of this is that Logan actually stuck to 2 minutes and the three of us didn't. We weren't even
close.
Not at
all.
This is great. So Logan, what is your current agitation level as a producer that we went way over time? Like, what are you like at a 7 agitation level or like 10, or what does agitated Logan look like?
You know,
because we still get to ask a question of Anna. Mr. Agitated
you can
Logan.
Ask that question when I'm editing the podcast later.
I see. True. So you already have in your mind the 10 minutes you're going to cut out of this thing.
I've got a couple 10
I
minutes.
I hate that he has the power. Yeah. All right, we have to ask Anna at least one question. So Logan, you get the final question of this whole introductory session.
Lily,
you have a good one. I'll let you two duke it out. Maybe you guys can crumple up this paper again.
Oh yeah, just keep shredding.
Who has the question?
Shred the skinniest piece of paper?
I think actually you guys should play rock paper scissors right now, and then the winner gets to ask the question.
Only
here we go.
Only one, not best of three.
Only
that's
one.
Yes. Do you
okay.
do rock
only
paper
one.
Scissors shoot?
Yes.
Okay. That's
the dumb
correct.
Way to do it. It's
right.
the dumb way to do
Shut
it.
Shut up.
I agree.
Rock
paper scissors shoot.
Okay, so Logan, you can either ask the question or defer to Lily to ask the question.
I'm going to defer to the bestie.
Okay, here we go.
Oh my gosh.
To the bestie.
Wow. All right, Lily, you get the final question of the day for this podcast.
Final question of the day. Okay, but you're like throwing me on the spot here.
We are.
Sorry.
Oh, good. I didn't have a question either. Glad I won.
I was just like so enraptured in Anna's story.
Oh my God.
But I guess I'm curious, being that we both have creative backgrounds. Mm-hmm. As you've been navigating this, I'm not in church, but I'm hearing the voice of God. Like, what role does art and writing and creativity play in all of that?
Oh, gosh, so much.
For you as a hostess to be put on the spot and come up with that question was so good. Okay, let's have it,
I'm
Anna.
I'm so jealous of that question.
I know, that's a great question.
I love that you just almost fell off your chair with that one.
Yeah, so I majored in English literature and purposely did not minor in creative writing because I wanted to be able to write because I loved it, not because I was supposed to. Mm. And so now I still do a lot of creative writing. Honestly, the whole rabbinical study thing is also incredibly creative because it is very, like, puzzle solving, put it all together, but also an ability to really think outside the box and stretch the ideas and make the connections. But I do a lot of creative writing. I play a lot of D&D. I do a lot of collaborative storytelling within my community. And that is something that has been so life-altering and so life-giving for me. And I think one of the things that I've realized in the last couple of years that I keep coming back to in every story that I tell, in a way that is really funny to me, because it doesn't matter what I start writing about, I'll get halfway through a project and be like, wow, I really wrote another story about this idea, didn't I? And it is the idea of there is always grief mixed up in life, but the love always makes it worth it. Mm. And so that is the story that I keep somehow telling over and over again, is the idea of maybe this doesn't end well, maybe it's a tragedy, maybe there's grief along the way, but the love always makes it worth it.
So if we're going to pivot to our last part of this, I know that we're going to try to end every episode. Mm-hmm. And by the way, thank you for all the stories. Thank you to me too for telling my story.
You're welcome. I'm part of the group.
I didn't know how to say that. I felt like I was supposed to be part of the group.
Thank you,
not
Peter,
just like
for
the,
sharing your story.
Thanks, Anna. That's very encouraging.
That was gonna be a long monologue otherwise.
it's the narcissism coming out again. But I hope people can find their story in some of this.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, Logan, as you did say so well, there's this bookend of people just on different journeys in this. But I know we're going to end every episode with a moment about deeper magic, and we're going to have any number of conversations. I think we decided, Lily, right, you've put together a 12-episode season 3 for us, right? Is that the scope and sequence of what we're talking about? About 12 episodes?
Approximately. I mean, I don't want to box us in.
Okay, but... All right. So we'll talk about all these things moving forward, but we always want to end every episode with just some sort of anecdote, some sort of thing that somehow reflects the deeper magic in the world, because I had a bonker story that I don't know what to do with this last week.
Oh, I know what story you're talking about.
Can I tell you? Okay.
Yeah. So, it's a great story.
So long story short, I don't know what to do with this. It for sure is some kind of healing energy in the world that I don't fully understand, mm-hmm. but I'm having to do a series of podcasts for a course at Bethel Seminary called Ministry in Conflict and Change.
This is a crazy story, by the way.
So I've been interviewing ministry leaders that I just happen to have known over all these years about how do you handle conflict, how do you handle change, all of that. And one of them was I interviewed my dad and a pastor in Africa who is about 40 years old in Rwanda, Nigeria. My dad has been – those two countries. And my dad has been doing biblical translation over there, and he's handing over now that ministry to his friend who, again, he grew up in Nigeria. He was a chemical engineer, and then he felt God's leading to start getting into pastoral ministry. I mean, just this wonderful, brilliant African man who is so inspired to just go do this translation work. But I asked him, I said, I think spirituality in Africa tends to be quite a bit different in its expression than the United States. Can you maybe just talk a little bit about that? So here's a story he told. I was fully unprepared for this. He said, yeah, I have a friend. I think this is how the story went. I have a friend who is a young person in ministry. He went to his mentor, an older person in ministry in Nigeria or Rwanda, and said, so I'm reading this passage of scripture where Jesus and the disciples go to the villages and it says, you should heal the sick and cast out demons and raise the dead and blah, blah, blah. Like all of this stuff. I don't know why, blah, blah, blah. That seems like a big deal. So you're supposed to do all of this. And he went to his mentor and he said, what do I do with this passage of scripture? And his mentor said, well, have you ever tried it? And he said, well, no. He said, well, go try it. So the dude gets on his bicycle, and I kid you not, he starts riding around the village, and he's going from house to house, and he is calling into the house, "Is anyone dead in there? Is anyone dead in there?" That was my mouth was wide open too.
I'm gaping right now.
I know. Is anybody dead? And the people in the house were like, "Well, no, no, no." And he got to like house number five, and somebody came out and said, "Yeah, like our daughter just died." And he goes, "Okay." And so he went back into the text and he started reading the story. He's like, "Well, what did Jesus do in this moment?" And I don't know what the pastor did, but he went into the house and, like, I don't know what he did. I'm making like gestures with my hands because I don't know what he said or did or whatever. And the little girl came back to life. This is a brilliant African man telling me this story, chemical engineer, person of faith, and just an amazing man.
Wow.
And then my favorite part of the story is after she comes back from the dead, he's like, "Okay." And he got back on his bike and went to the next house. "Is anybody dead in there? Is anybody dead in there?" And he just went around. My faith has no category for that at all. So there's fairly absurd deeper magic moment that this just happened in the last week, and I still literally have no idea what to do with that story.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, I usually deeper magic, we're always thinking in the realms of like there's something below the surface. That's right at the top.
It is.
That's bubbling as far as real magic goes. That's, wow.
Yeah. So I would love, if it's, at some point, it'd be really fun to get him. His name is Prosper. Just this brilliant man that we could actually get him into deeper magic at some point. It'd be really fun
so cool.
to
mm-hmm.
talk to him. So. Well, I have no great way of wrapping up the episode. Anna, do you want to close this up? Do you want me? How about Logan?
I feel like we should pass it off to a newbie.
I think so, too. I think Logan. One of those. Do you guys want to play rock, paper, scissors
I think
one
it's
more
been
time?
Well established that I'm actually the expert when it comes to wrapping things up. So if we're talking newbie, it's not me.
Well, but you volunteered Lily for the question, so I think it's your turn now.
I think it is. Logan, wrap us up.
Sorry.
Right. Yeah, I know.
Well, it has been a pleasure being here with you for the first inaugural introduction episode of The Deeper Magic with Peter, Anna, Lily, and myself, Logan. Thank you for joining us. We will have many more to come, and we look forward to seeing you in the future.
Thank you for joining us on The Deeper Magic. Until our next episode drops, join us on Instagram @DeeperMagicPodcast.